Hello, listener, and welcome to the second Christmas edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes, in which Emma and myself, Stephen Fielding, discuss something from popular culture and the political implications of it, and just chew it over for a wee while. And as we did last year, we talked about what did we talk about? I've totally forgotten what we talked about, Emma.
Last year we did It's a Wonderful Life.
It was a memorable podcast. It's a Wonderful Life. So this Christmas we were trying to think about what we should talk about with a Christmas theme. My bid was Die Hard, which I know controversially I consider that to be a Christmas movie, and I think Emma just considered it a rubbish movie. Not too long. It was so short they had to make another four, or another three of them, just to complete the story. But anyway, we're getting slightly off message.
Slightly off piste.
Off that. And so Emma's choice, which prevailed, as usually does, to be honest, is Scrooged. And so, given it was your choice, Emma, would you like to just, if the listener hasn't seen Scrooged, then would you mind just explaining what Scrooged is about?
Yeah, absolutely. Scrooged is an 80s take on Dickens' classic A Christmas Carol. So it has Bill Murray as Frank Cross, who, instead of being an accountant, which I believe Ebenezer Scrooge is, is a TV executive, and it's set just before Christmas, runs up to Christmas Eve, and he starts off and he's just, you know, the absolute vile epitome of trashy TV, desperately trying to frighten the life out of people in order to get them watching more. And then he is visited by the ghost of Christmas past, where he sees his childhood and where he met the love of his life, who we find out he's later lost. We see his the ghost of Christmas present, which shows him what's the struggles are of the people in his life at that moment, including his secretary Grace, the love of his life again, and the a man he met at the homeless shelter at which she works. And then finally, the Ghost of Christmas Future, where all the terrible things that the benign influence of Frank Cross on the world have come to pass. And he is, lonely, terrified and dead. Not necessarily in that order. It's the classic story of redemption. You know, most people are aware, at least of the shape of the Christmas Carol story. Mm. So he comes good, and tries to make amends towards the end. There's an interesting moral question as to whether making amends because you've been told you're going to die, and everything is awful, is actually a moral choice or a selfish choice. But, that might be taking us a bit too far into being the good place rather than our podcast.
No, I thought that was, because I'd not seen Scrooged before, and I watched it. This is now going to reveal, you know, when you lift the curtain and let the listener in to the glamorous world of podcasting. I watched it last night on DVD. Having it in the morning, watched Scrooge, the 1951 kind of more faithful adaptation of A Christmas Carol that Alistair Sim was in. And in both of them, I did wonder about that kind of implication, that the reason why Scrooge or Frank Cross in Scrooged, it's arguable that they decide to be good people and to start being more kind of generous, thinking about others, becoming more involved, is because they see the future of their death and they know what will happen to them if they don't do that. I mean, in Scrooge, in Christmas Carol, it's made very apparent that if you don't become involved, help people, are, you know, become a kind of caring, sharing person. I mean, it sounds a bit wet when you put it like that, but there's more to it in the Dickens. That you, Ebenezer Scrooge, will be damned to go around the world as a ghostly figure, trying to help people that you should have tried to help when you were alive, but not being able to, and that will be the agony that you live through for eternity. So there's a that's not really kind of brought out in Scrooge. I keep saying that in a very annoying way to distinguish it. But that's kind of my take on Scrooged. Having just watched a few hours before the other one, the more faithful adaptation of one, and I haven't got a problem with things not being, you know, being clever and whatever, using the material in different ways. So I haven't got a problem with it being, because it is quite clever what it does, because Frank Cross, the executive TV executive, is responsible for a version, another adaptation of A Christmas Carol that's going out live on his network. And that's good. That's clearly a rubbish, you know, ridiculous kind of version of it. So there's lots of clever little intertextual references for that, for Christmas Carol. So it's more that it wasn't really as clear about what the real message was. It kind of took the Dickens really out of it, because Dickens was a huge moralist. And he had and that desperately does come through the more faithful adaptation, and he's got a very clear political sense, and it isn't simply about everyone's got to be good on Christmas Day and be nice to people, but it actually is that Christmas is a kind of a window into a moral possibility, a moral world, and we could all be like that every day of the year, and we would all be better for it. Society would be better for it. And actually, in A Christmas Carol, it has got a very strong sense, like everything in Dickens has got a strong sense of a world we have lost, which is, you know, sometime in the, you know, just before factories arrived, where everybody was part of a kind of mutual society. Even, you know, businesses had a purpose that was more than simply making money, and was a kind of, you know, stakeholder kind of situation. And then along comes individualistic, profit-driven, only interested in money capitalism, which is what Ebenezer Scrooge is kind of the epitome of, and destroys all of those relations. And that's where it starts. You know, Ebenezer Scrooge is extremely rich, miserable, he's isolated, he doesn't care about anybody else, and he's a horrible person. But he's also, you know, deeply exploitative and creating misery for the Scratchits, his employees. So there's, and with Scrooged, it was kind of there, but it was kind of a little bit lost. I don't know.
Do you think, I don't think that at all. For me, okay. I thought it was quite a political take on it. And what it did was update that the Victorian capitalism to the 1980s and the really sort of rampant capitalistic approach of the 1980s, and the media messaging that was such a huge part of that. You know, that's why Frank's a TV exec, not an Enron exec or whatever. You know, he is selling not just his message in his own workspace, but projecting that to the world. And I thought that was an interesting update. I thought some of the politics in it was fascinatingly prescient. The film literally starts with the war on Christmas. A drama that they've made with Lee Majors saving Christmas from some mad terrorists, saving Father Christmas and Merry Christmas from terrorists. It was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, yeah, and when you think now that there are genuinely people on the right who will argue that there's some nebulous war on Christmas, I just thought that was fascinating. And I think if you take that, it doesn't have to be Christmas. I mean, maybe this is a good moment to play our clip, which is at the end when Bill Murray has gone through his revelations. He makes a long speech about morality and how Christmas is that window into doing better, and it doesn't just have to be Christmas. You could do it every day. You could have the feeling every day. So should we have a quick listen to that now?
That happened because it's Christmas Eve, I'm telling you. I'm not crazy. It's Christmas Eve. It's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer. We smile a little easier. We share a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we always hoped we would be. It's a miracle. It's really a sort of a miracle because it happens every Christmas Eve. And if you waste that miracle, you're going to burn for it. I know what I'm talking about. You have to do something. You have to take a chance. You do have to get involved. There are people that are having trouble making their miracle happen. There are people that don't have enough to eat. There are people that are cold. You can go out and say hello to these people. You can take an old blanket out of the closet and say, here, you can make them a sandwich and say, oh, by the way, here. I get it now. And if you give, then it can happen. Then the miracle can happen to you. It's not just the poor and the hungry. It's everybody who's got to have this miracle. And it can happen tonight for all of you. If you believe in this spirit thing, you the miracle will happen, and then you'll want it to happen again tomorrow. You won't be one of these bastards that says Christmas is once a year and it's a fraud. It's not. It can happen every day. You've just got to want that feeling. And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it. You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you. I believe in it now. I believe it's going to happen to me now. I'm ready for it. It's great. It's a good feeling. It's really better than I felt in a long time. I'm ready. Have a Merry Christmas, everybody. Did I forget something, big man?
God blesses everyone.
There you go. And of course, that clip ended with, and I'm genuinely tearing up here, with the Tiny Tim character, who isn't called Tim, but is the young son of the Cratchit equivalent, which is his secretary Grace, who hasn't spoken since his father was killed a couple of years ago. And he comes, I mean, he's seen on TV that you're supposed to say God bless us everyone, and he comes along, and he sort of says it, and it's the first words he's spoken, and I literally can turn that, I can turn my TV on 2 seconds before that point with no engagement in the drama, and I will still be absolutely in floods by the end, by the time he says that. Every single time I cannot get through it without crying.
I get the impression ridiculous. See, I'm very empathetic, I understand. But actually, it's quite interesting in the film, in Scrooged, the kid, where he gets the line from, he's watching Scrooge, the film that I was talking about, on TV. And it's the earlier version of Tiny Tim, who he learns that line from. I'm not saying that Scrooge hasn't got any politics, because it does. Because, I mean, first of all, his secretary is black. She's a single parent with quite a few kids. But it is made clear, as you were saying, the reason why there's no man about is because he was killed. There's no explanation as to how he was killed and why he was killed.
But he was shot, wasn't he? I think that was the backstory.
I must have missed a reference if so. But it was.
It made it clear that there was no irresponsibility there. It was a very 1980s no welfare queens here type, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, because it was 1988. I mean, the last year of the Reagan presidency. So the fact that the message was as it was. I mean, it was kind of faithful. Well, it was faithful to the Dickens message, but it was just, I thought, slightly diluted. I mean, there was the bigger thing about the romance in Scrooge. There wasn't much of a romance. It was there, but it wasn't the center of attention, which it was far more in Scrooged. But I think it was really good what they did with TV. I think that was quite clever, using that as a kind of stand-in for capitalism and exploitation, and making all kinds of jokes about trying to make programs for cats, because
although Smudge thinks that's a very good idea.
Yes, cats and dogs are all watching TV now, so we need to make programs for them so they can. Anyway, So it was all there. And yeah, maybe you could say, well, in the late 80s, saying anything that was saying there is such a thing as society, which is effectively what it was saying, because that's what Dickens was saying in the era of neoliberalism, which Scrooged was kind of produced in, was echoing the same sentiment in the era of liberalism that Dickens was writing about and protesting about really quite powerfully. But I guess, you know, when it comes down to it, what my problem was Bill Murray.
How is Bill Murray ever a problem?
A Bill Murray fan. I mean, I can see. I know. I thought this was going to be quite controversial, and hopefully, our listener has recovered from the shock. I know, you know, he can be good, but I just thought this film was not really for him, because first of all, when he's evil and horrible, he's not really evil or horrible. I mean, he says evil or horrible things, but he's got that kind of flat-faced, no expression, dry Bill Murray shtick going on, where you kind of think, and he's also been very funny about being evil. I mean, and I'm thinking, you're not really, you know. And then when he's had his epiphany, he's still Bill Murray, and he's got that kind of expressionless face. So there's no kind of joy that I can see coming out from it. So I just... And he didn't really sell it for me.
So I just think completely the opposite. Isn't that funny? I mean, it's a Bill Murray vehicle. He was clearly at the height of his powers. This was written just after Ghostbusters, I think, a few years after.
Wikipedia.
Oh, 4 years.
4 years,
okay.
4 years after Ghostbusters. It was the next film after Ghostbusters,
okay.
As he had last.
And so, you know, he was kind of, he was a big deal then. You know, he was on everybody's lunchbox. This is clearly a vehicle for him. I mean, some of the other casting is fascinating. Bobcat Goldthwait, whatever happens, you know, he was sort of huge and everywhere, and then he vanished, like, you're very flash in the pan sort of thing.
I only know him from Larry Sanders.
Oh,
he was
in
Sanders.
A lot of the Police Academy films.
Oh, was he? That's why I didn't really ever
they
seen
were terrible, but I was a right age for them, so I went and saw a few of them in the cinema.
Right.
Yeah, he was, well, he started off as a criminal and then he was so popular they brought him in as an officer, which is slightly weird. Okay. And then what I thought was a really clever little bit of casting was Blake Carrington as the Jacob Marley character. You know, putting the guy who on TV is the epitome of capitalism. As that, I thought that was a really, really tasty bit of casting.
No, it was well casted, apart from, I would say, Bill Murray. But
apart from you to say Bill Murray, but I mean, I just, you know, and for me, I think you have to like Bill Murray. And if you like Bill Murray, then it does its thing. I thought all the ghosts were very good. I mean, the final ghost, you didn't really get so much of the flavour of him. But the first two ghosts were great. And I think they're both people who've been around on the comedy circuit for a very, you were well established.
Yeah. Christmas Present was good. She kept hitting.
Yes. it is quite schmaltzy at times. And Bill Murray does have a tendency to schmaltz. I think he likes to be the stoic cynic. In a schmaltzy atmosphere. I think that's his thing. Yeah. But it's Christmas. I want schmaltz. I want to cry at Tiny Tim.
No,
and I want to do it while being told that capitalism is rubbish.
Maybe our listeners should tell us what their politics is, but I'm assuming quite a lot of people want to do that. But maybe it's because, you know, as I explained yesterday, I watched Scrooge in the morning, and I cried my eyes out. I mean, it was it was ridiculous. And then maybe by the time in the evening, I just didn't have any tears left. I've only got a little supply, but I wasn't really moved in the same way. And I can't explain to you why that is. I just wasn't. And I can get what was going on, and I could appreciate that it was a little bit, you know, a bit clever doing this and adapting it here and tweaking that and all of the rest of it. But I just didn't feel it. Whereas I did, it's not the story and it's not the message behind it. But I just thought that the more faithful adaptation was just brought out more of the Dickens. And more of the Dickens.
Well, this may be where we're differing, because I don't like Dickens. You don't like Bill Murray, and I don't like Dickens.
I don't really like Dickens either. There's a copy of what's that one? Little Dorrit, right? I managed to get through about 200 pages of Little Dorrit, and there's another 300 left or so, and I've just left it. And for years.
That was me with the Pickwick Papers.
Well, there's only that one chapter about the by-election I've ever read, and that's work. So I can appreciate Dickens and I mean his politics and whatever, but he doesn't spare you the schmaltz. I mean, far more than you know, the Bill Murray film. Scrooge was really, you know, did tear at the heartstrings, and there's all kinds of twee stuff going on. But I still cried. The Dickens had more politics in it. As in, you know, like I think I said, he has this strong sense that there was a time, around the time of Scrooge's childhood, and in the same way that maybe they could have done something about Frank Cross's childhood, but they didn't really do much about that. That there was this era when people cared about people, and it wasn't simply a moral thing; it was also an economic thing. He's very clear that it's capitalism, or at least that form of capitalism that really Scrooge himself, he benefits from, he takes advantage of, you know, for various emotional reasons, he becomes obsessed with money and hates people. He hates society. Whereas it wasn't. So there is, it's actually much better explained. Whereas in Scrooged, Bill Murray's dad's horrible. His mother seems a bit weak. And his home life is a bit, there's not much going on. He watches TV all the time. And that's it, really. And there's no real explanation as to why he's like that. And there's no real political economy, if I want to sound like someone who's on Novara Media. There's no political economy in Scrooged that I can see. So it is kind of everybody should be nice to everybody else, and you'll feel better for it. But there's nothing else there. I mean, did you get, but you obviously found more in it than I did.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it was, there was a lot of juxtaposition, which I thought was well done. So, you know, you've got the homeless shelter. There is a sense of, you know, the two New Yorks, for example, him in his tux, and then the homeless shelter, and the going from the very, very posh restaurants to the shelter where they can't get turkeys. I thought that was well done. The guy who plays the homeless guy who thinks he's Richard Burton.
Yeah.
He doesn't think he's Richard Burton. He thinks Bill Murray is Richard Burton. Slightly bizarre. I think that almost entirely put in there so that Bill Murray could do a Richard Burton impression.
Yeah.
and that's what I mean. It is a Bill Murray vehicle in that way. But he, again, is one of these great character actors that you see in lots of things. And he plays it really lovely. Mm. I think there was a lot of the cause politics of the 80s that were sort of snuck in there. So a lot of the things that the Claire, the girlfriend, says is kind of things that are really important, that were key political issues in the 80s. There is at one point, completely and utterly at random, there's a Free South Africa sticker that is really focused on in the control booth. And I was like, well, that's just randomly been thrown in there. But I suppose it is part of this whole, you know, juxtaposition of the different political strands of the 80s. I guess that's kind of where, because I was probably politically informed of the 80s, it's when I grew up. So I think a lot of it spoke to issues that I grew up, that grew up politicising me, not least apartheid.
Yes, well, there's and also the Black Secretary has a big South Africa poster in her house, in her flat. So, I noticed all that.
So I think for me, it was more kind of less, it wasn't a political economy film, you're right. The capitalism is taken over by consumerism of television. Mm-hmm. So it's more a critique of consumerism, I suppose, than it is of capitalism. And it's slightly mixed messages on capitalism, because one of the things that he is seen to do that is bad is not give people very good Christmas presents.
Yes, towel.
So, you know, what does that mean?
As an an expression of emotional sentiment, it's not the best, is it? You know, what kind of
presents? Yeah. And so, you know, but I think I felt that it reflected the political dichotomy of the 80s pretty well through that kind of Dickensian narrative.
Yes. Yeah. I don't expect to see, you know, a mainstream Hollywood film and expect socialism being promoted and then criticize it for not saying something it would never say. Not at all. It's just that maybe have, because Scrooge, you know, was the 1951 version. That was like part of a raft of Dickens adaptations that were, you know, were made in the late 40s and the early 1950s. And there's an interesting reason why that might have been, because, you know, it was actually looking back to how capitalism was and who was the most popular critic of capitalism. Of the 19th century, it was Dickens, as things were politically changing, so that when Scrooge refers to, you know, when he's being asked for charity in his various, you know, well-to-do, because of course a lot of it is this just noblesse oblige, is this just, you know, the rich looking after the poor, but actually relations don't change beyond that. I think that's probably a criticism of Dickens. When he's visited by some, you know, well-to-do, well-meaning people for charity, he basically says, are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? You know, he's like, why should I give you charity? I pay for these. Actually, the audience in the early 1950s would be some of them who could actually remember workhouses and how the poor law actually was. So maybe that there was a contextual reason why they decided to linger on some of that stuff, because it was the start of the welfare state. Things didn't have to be like that anymore. We can do things, you know. There was actually a political expression of the idea that it should be Christmas every day, you know, a Labour government, welfare state, whatever. Whereas in the Bill Murray, you know, 1988, the very late 80s, when this would have been conceived, there wasn't so much. I mean, there would have been, you know, at that point, the Democrats were starting to adapt to you know, Reagan's, you know, the emphasis on the market and all of that. So maybe it was the context which meant that things were diluted. It isn't simply that it was a Bill Murray vehicle and they had to put a romance in because it was a Hollywood film. But they could snip, you know, they could put little bits in, like about South Africa, into a film which had been a watered down version of Dickens.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of where they went for it in terms of it was, you know, the. It was cause-based politics of the 80s rather than the economic disagreements of the 70s.
Yeah.
And in that way, it reflected its times.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, and I wouldn't criticise it within the context. It's just, if you look at it from another time, then the politics are a bit more overt. Although, sure. You know, that's just because that context was slightly different. I did come across, I mean, so I wonder... You know, I mean, it's like anything with like a film or a TV show. Does it really change how we think about things? And I have to say that, you know, Christmas for me, as in Scrooge, it was like a bit of family because of his brother and, you know, he'd been estranged from him and now then he's reunited with him and all of that. I mean, Christmas for me hasn't really had that a political message, really. I've not been brought up to think of it like that, you know, that it is actually should be about something more than giving gifts and just being nice to your family members for one day, if you can manage it. That it actually, because given that Dickens is meant to be the man that invented Christmas, at least that was a drama that was, it was called that he kind of features in as a character. Actually, it's, you know, as far as Dickens is concerned, actually Christmas isn't just Christmas.
So that's, I think I do have a slightly political context to Christmas,
right.
For two reasons. So the slightly negative one is that my grandparents were Tories and my parents weren't, very, very Labour.
Yeah.
And my grandparents came to Christmas every year and they just bickered about politics for 3 days. But on a more positive note, my dad every year used to take us to the West End for Christmas Eve. And it was a big, big treat. We never went to the West End. When we all started working there later in life, it was slightly less of a treat. But part of what we would do, we had a very ritualized journey where we would go to the Regent Street lights, we'd go to Trafalgar Square to see the big Christmas tree, we'd go to Hamley's Grotto, go to Selfridge's Grotto, and we would go to the South African Embassy and we would spend half an hour on the permanent vigil.
Oh, right.
So for me, that's always been a big, big part of how I think about Christmas. It has that South African element to it.
Right.
So I suppose... And I was raised in the church as well. And a lot of the Christmas message in your more lefty, you know, Hackney churches was about sort of thinking about the less fortunate at Christmas.
Mm.
So, again, I think that was a way of thinking about, you know, the politics of Christmas through Christian socialism, basically.
Mm.
So I guess maybe that's a slightly different, you know, because my Christmas wasn't just about kind of family and chocolate, although there was a great deal of both.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I can't speak for our listener, but I mean, that sounds like a slightly untypical kind of thing. you're actually religion and politics all involved in that, whereas for most people, at least in my experience, it was. You know, watching the telly, trying not to watch the Queen.
Battle over whether we watch the Queen's speech year in, year out between Nana and Mum was just, can imagine.
Because the Queen's speech is obviously the most very memorable. We can all remember, I remember what she said in 1993. Of course, we all remember what she said. Actually, watching Scrooge rather than Scrooge, because that had it had already been in my head that actually, yeah, this is really about politics. This is, you know, it should be Christmas every day, as Wizard,
as Roy Wood put it.
Although I don't think he meant socialism, you know, or at least a society in which individualism is tempered by a sense of obligation and a sense of mutuality and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're doing well not to mention Jeremy Corbyn in this context. That made me think more about it to such an extent. I've now bought A Christmas Carol, so I want to see whether, you know, to the extent to which Dickens actually does say these things and how far he does say those things. But Scrooged is an entertaining film. If you like Bill Murray, obviously it's a great film, and it does have a message. It's just slightly compared to previous iterations. It's just, I think at least, it's slightly watered down, but it still has an interesting late 1980s kind of take on popular politics.
Mm, mm. There you go. Well, I think, and also you will cry at the end, otherwise you have a heart of stone. I know you didn't because you'd already been cried out, but my God, the little kid.
The little
adorable.
Kid. The little kid when he finally says those words of Tiny Tim, obviously. Yes, and everybody's singing, you know, that Aretha Franklin song, isn't it? And it's all very, yes. So anyway, I've got nothing left to say.
No, I think we're just about Christmased out.
Right. So I don't know when our listener will be listening, but if you're listening before the 25th of December and you are of the Christian faith or of none, then happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And if you're not Christian, and happy Christmas, whoever you are, wherever you are.
God bless us, everyone.
Oh, I'm crying now. I'm getting the onion out. And if it's after the 25th of December, happy Christmas 2019.
Happy New Year.
Yes, well, that as well.
May 2019 bring us better things than 2018.
There's a low bar.
Lovely. Well, thank you, Steve. Merry Christmas to you.
And Merry Christmas to you. Emma too. And so it behoves me to say that this was a Political Human production, that the theme tune is the product of the genius mind of Lord Stuart Wood, And if you wish to rate us on iTunes or whatever flipping platform you happen to be hearing this on, then why the hell not rate us?
Give us a Christmas present.
Yeah, give us a Christmas present, yes. a nice one. Make it, I don't know if it's a high or a low number, but, you know, whatever. So, goodbye.
Bye.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Emma.
What do you do when you really like something?
You know what I do, Emma? I talk to all my friends about it. What do you do?
That's a great idea, Steve. I even tell strangers on iTunes how much I rate and review it.
What a great idea.